All right, it is a gorgeous Saturday night here in the Bay Area, and we bring in one of our dear friends. He's a Major League Baseball broadcaster, college football, college basketball, you name it. One of my favorites, and that is Rich Waltz. Rich, how are you?
Marty, how are you? Hope you're well and safe and healthy down there.
Well, we are, and I know you're up in Seattle, and you're also waiting for baseball and all the decisions. And look, you've done the Marlins TV for so many years. You're a huge favorite of my family down there. You've been part of the Mariners broadcast. You've done MLB TV and all sorts of different things. Do you have a feel, a take on where we're going here over this next week?
You know, I think, and for whatever reason, it seems like baseball and maybe a little bit of football, when there's negotiations between players and owners, it always seems to spill out in the press. And what feels like negotiations turns into arguing. It's like, well, you know, they offered this, and we offer this. And they just can't keep it behind closed doors. I think what you've seen in the papers and read is essentially that, is negotiating. And my hope is that they come to an agreement here in the next week, because obviously players, if they're going to do this on July 1st or July 4th or early July, they've got to get people in camp. They've got to get arms ready. They've got to get people in shape. So my hope is that they get it together. I know the players are actually talking in their last offer of a longer season for more games than the 80 or 81, maybe to offset the difference in money, which would extend the season. Probably you'd see a World Series in mid or late November in that case. But, you know, I'm hopeful just like everybody else. You want them to play. You don't know what it's going to look like or sound like or feel like, but you're just hopeful that they come to an agreement and get the thing started, because in this ever-changing world, you don't know what the status of the virus or anything like that's going to look like in a month either. But if they're going to get going in July, they got to get it done here, you would think, in the next week.
Boy, I agree 100% with you. Good analysis. Rich Waltz is with us. Rich, I threw this question out to a number of people tonight, and I'll throw it to you. It was asked of me midweek when I was on a KNBR show as well with Dieter Kurtenbach. And that is three things maybe that we may see during this 82-game season, or things that you would like to see. And, you know, when I was asked the question, I talked about, well, maybe that extra inning rule at the 12th inning so you don't have an 18-inning game, you know, during all this tumult that we're going through now. You have three things maybe that you'd sort of like to see baseball do in this 82-game season, because they're open to experiments. I have that feeling.
Yeah, look, I think now is the time to do that, right? Whether it's the relief pitcher's role, enforced pace of play, like you said, the extra inning rule. But one thing jumps out at me, and it just watching a little bit of the Korean League, and I've got international baseball experience in having gone to Japan twice to do games in Japan, having done games in Latin America as well as Major League Baseball. And here's something that dawned on me the other day. Major League Baseball, if they're going to play, they're going to play without fans. And if you play without fans, you ask any athlete, they'll tell you, and this goes for any sport, I hear it from coaches in football and basketball and in Major League Baseball too, if there's not a lot of people in the seats, it's a low-energy crowd. You have to bring your own energy, right? That's what they tell athletes. We've got to bring our own athlete, our own enthusiasm, bring our own excitement, bring our own energy. So for baseball, to me, that may translate in more personality, because how do you bring your own energy in baseball? It's personality. You've got to show more personality. And I think if they do start these games without fans, you're going to see players, and you see it a little bit in the Korean games that you've watched. I'm not saying it's going to be a bat flip by every player, but you're going to see more bat flips. You're going to see more dugout celebrations. You're going to see more emotion from players trying to pump themselves up or reward themselves or enjoy themselves, because that crowd component won't be there, right, to soak in when a big guy has a big hit or a big strikeout. You've got to bring your own energy. So I'm, for one, welcome that. I'm not a big fan of this is the way the game's been played for 100 years. Keep a lid on it. I'm, you know, there's a younger generation of players. There's a younger generation of fans, more importantly. And there's players from other countries that have tested that and pushed that. And I think the lack of fans, somewhat, this is going to happen naturally in that setting. I think you'll see players with, you know, trying to create their own energy, thus showing more personality. And I think that'll be a good thing.
I love it. Great point. Great point. I'm glad we asked the question. That's a good one. And no one has said that as of yet. So very good. Hey, ESPN did a documentary on Roy Halladay, and a very bittersweet, of course, a tremendous pitcher that he was, and the tragic death, and of course, pitched the perfect game against the Marlins. You were there. So get some of your thoughts about Roy Halladay and the perfect game, of course, and maybe a little bit about the documentary.
Well, first, Halladay, you know, he had a much longer career with the Blue Jays. I mean, people, he got national spotlight and recognition, certainly with the postseason, the perfect game with the Phillies, and then that same year throwing a no-hitter, only the second in postseason history with the Phillies. But he was only there for 4 years, and I saw him a lot. I probably saw him 4 or 5 starts a year for those 4 years, and I had a couple of his starts in Toronto as well. He was... to me, a great example of, I've always said that the word stuff in baseball is, to me, been hijacked to mean velocity, right? Or movement at velocity. He's got great stuff. He throws 98, whatever. Halladay didn't throw that hard. I went back to Fangraphs this morning after I watched last night just to remind myself what he threw and how he threw it. And he lived in the low 90s, but he had an incredible cutter. He had an incredible two-seamer. He could move that 92, 93, 91 both ways. He had impeccable control, and he had a great hook, and he was just an incredible competitor. And watching him pitch, you know, that night in Miami was an incredible night. Josh Johnson was the other starter, and he pitched really well, but Halladay was just brilliant. He struck out 11 that night. I don't even remember one ball being barreled up, and you know, it was a surreal night. And the documentary was, it's a terrific documentary. It's incredibly sad because, you know, Halladay, and I was around those Phillies a lot and the new guys on that team. Halladay was a really private person, and not a lot of his teammates knew about the issues that he had, both health and with substance abuse, with, you know, prescription pain meds. And the documentary last night it's heartbreaking. Just, you know, watching what an athlete like him, who was such a hard worker, the hardest worker many people have ever seen and that they'd been around in that era, what he went through to try to get his body to keep going. And it ultimately was part of his undoing with that tragic plane crash. I hope that there are other athletes out there, whether they're baseball or other sports that watch that, who, you know, if they take something from it, see that as it's not a weakness to ask for help. And he did ask for help, but he never really completely followed through, and it never really got through to him. His wife is very candid in the documentary. So I think if you're a baseball fan or if you're just a human being fan, that's a important documentary to watch.
Well, it made me think of Sandy Koufax when he retired after 1966. He was taking all sorts of painkillers and anti-inflammatories, and he said, "I want to have the rest of my life." And that's why he retired at the age of 32 and considered by many the greatest pitcher, greatest left-hander, greatest pitcher in baseball history. So the Halladay story resonates throughout baseball and the history of baseball because players have taken painkillers and other athletes as well. So I'm glad that you could critique it for us and that you were there to see the perfect game. So, Rich, I appreciate that. Moving along a little bit here on this Saturday night with Rich Waltz, And I was thinking of, you know, maybe a few of your favorite baseball, personal baseball moments. And you've done some Giant games as well. And as you point out, and you've done games in Asia and the World Baseball Classic in Latin America. You've done so much in your career. Give me a few of your favorites.
Well, so baseball, I mean, because I grew up in the Bay Area, so I had just about every franchise, whether it's football, basketball, baseball, there were moments as a fan, as a broadcaster. You know, if you're like me, I didn't go to school for broadcasting, and I had to climb through the minor leagues and scratch and claw for 7 or 8 years before I got my first opportunity in the big league. So my first big league game was probably that's a moment for me. That was 1994. I was filling in. I was the pregame TV guy for Seattle, and I filled in on a game. It was Seattle against Baltimore. It was Randy Johnson against Mike Mussina. So that was pretty memorable, and the Kingdom was full. So that's cool. And you look, as you do a lot of games, you end up seeing a lot of cool stuff. I've had 5 no-hitters. I don't put that on my mantle and say, you know, what a great broadcaster I am because I have called 5 no-hitters in a perfect game. That just happens. You have nothing to do with it. You're just along for the ride. So I put that up as being fortunate to be able to call those games. There have been some, you know, milestones. Ichiro's 3,000th hit, I was able to call. Great, crazy World Baseball Classic games. The Netherlands' incredible upset of what was essentially a Major League All-Star team in the Dominican Republic. In 2000, I believe it was 2009. You know, for the Bay Area, I grew up, you know, going to A's and Giants games. So I got, as a young kid, I got to see the start of the A's dynasty. And as a young kid, I got to see Willie Mays play. That was, you know, you hear from your father how great Willie Mays was. And then as a little kid, it was at the end. I mean, it's early 70s, Willie Mays, 70, 71, and McCovey and those guys. It's like, wow, that's really cool. I did get, you know, when I was early in my career, I was at ESPN. I did get to call in 2001 some of Bond's significant home runs in September. And I was in for ESPN Radio and ESPN, a couple of them in San Diego and one game, I believe. And we were in the 60s at that time. And then there was a home run late 60s in the count, I believe, at home against the Rockies. So, and then, look, great memories of Cal football and Stanford football and all that stuff. I was there for the big game and the lateral game. You know, my seat was right above the Stanford band. So I don't really look at I'll tell you what, Marty, the most memorable thing I've ever seen on a baseball field is something that nobody talks about and I rarely talk about. I was a pregame host for the Mariners in 2004, and John Olerud, a great player, if you had not heard of John Olerud, he's a gold glover, 2-time world champion, flirted with 400 one year, great hitter, on-base machine, had a great career with the Blue Jays, the Mets, and the Mariners. In 2004, that Mariner team that had won all those games got old real quick. And in the middle of that season, and Olerud grew up in Seattle, so he was a hometown hero. He had great years. It was stunning news. They released him like at 1 o'clock in the afternoon. They were to play that night. They released him, and it was just a shock because it was the beginning of the end for that era of Mariner baseball. And so that night I'm doing the pregame show and about to hand it off to Dave Niehaus, and they are presenting the lineups at home plate. And as I'm, you know, speaking and they're showing shots, I said, wait a minute. I said, that's John Olerud. Huh. He had scheduled a tour with some special needs kids. And you would think somebody who's been released by a team in his hometown, there's, you know, disappointment, embarrassment, all that. He came to the game that night and did the tour. And right before first pitch, there's John Olerud behind home plate with these special needs kids. And just, you know, watching that was like, wow, that is one of the, in all sports, one of the best things I've ever seen. So that's a memorable moment that doesn't show up in a box score or, you know, in sports pages.
Boy, great story. Rich Walz, great story. And I'll say this, you have a wonderful, wonderful, long sports history to you. And you take a look at you, I'd say, well, he must be about 25 years old. When did you, honestly, you've got the look, thank God. It's a gift.
Well, and, you know, but, what? Early in my career, early in my career, to be honest with you, it really hurt me. Because I got to, I played baseball at UC Davis and decided I wanted to be a broadcaster and was stupid enough to think I could do it without any experience, and got a job in the minor leagues in Spokane, Washington. And as I climbed through the minor leagues, I had done 2 or 3 years of AAA in Las Vegas. And so I was sitting in my, 27, 28 years old. And I remember going in and applying for jobs in the big leagues and in regional sports networks and stuff like that. And every person said, I can't hire you. You look like you're 18. And I did. And I did look like I was 18. So it hurt me back then. It's helped me now. Certainly I'm blessed by my mom's genes. My mom is, will turn 87 in Martinez, Marty. And she's still working full time. She runs 4 big daycare centers in Martinez, called the Woodbridge Daycare Center. She's done that for 40 years, and she's finally going to retire at the end of December. So that's where I get it, and that's a pretty good place to get it from.
Rich, it's fabulous having you on. I appreciate it, and you're welcome anytime, and you've got that long history of sports. And let's hope we're talking some baseball in a couple of weeks, and we'll get you back on and see what's cooking. But I appreciate you being with us, and be well.
I appreciate it, Marty, and rest in peace to Roy Steele. That, if you grew up in the Bay Area and you read that news today, it took a little piece of your childhood away from you. So, but no, keep it going, Marty, and we'll hope that I'll see you, maybe not in a ballpark. You never know where we're going to be if you're doing games, but let's hope that our paths cross soon.
All right, Rich, be well. All right, that is Rich Walz. Always a pleasure to have him on. We will have more with Roy Steele as the show goes on. So, Rich, I appreciate your pointing that out. All right, more coming up, KNBR 680-1045, the sports leader.